Friends of the same old man. Game
Here's Johnny.
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
So serious.
I am Iron Man.
This is a tasty burger.
Welcome to the In Session Film Podcast.
Welcome to this week's extra film segment for January 6, 2016. I'm Jaden Duran.
It sounds so strange to say 2016.
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
We are still in 2016.
Yeah. The all 6 days of it.
All 6 days of it.
Hey, but we've had some interesting developments. Star Wars The Force Awakens is now number one in North America.
Yes.
Number one highest grossing movie of all time in North America right now.
I know. That's very exciting. I think it was only a matter of time because it eclipsed Titanic in like 15 days. I think it was just a matter of time before it passed Avatar as well. And the more that it gains steam and the more people are talking about it, going to see it, and plus the only thing that can really get in its path is really Deadpool. And that comes out, the second week?
It comes out in February. I forget exactly what day.
Yeah, I want to say it's the second weekend, so like February 12th, I think, something like that is when it comes out. So it could still roll for like 6 more weeks before it starts to really run out of steam.
Right. But the thing with Deadpool is that we really don't know how well that's going to be received critically, or even just from the general movie-going fan base, who probably has... Deadpool's a movie that is strictly for the fans, I think, and I think a lot of other, you know, movie-going folks that don't know a whole lot about it are probably going to be turned off by it, too. And the thing with Star Wars is it overtook Avatar, which was, you know, at that time as high as Titanic in its own way. But the thing, I forgot how long it took Avatar to reach that title. Star Wars took it really quickly, and this reason alone, because it's good. It's actually good. Yeah. Which I can't quite say the same thing about Avatar personally, so I'm happy to see Star Wars in there.
Yeah, I am too, and I don't mind Avatar. And I think the reason Avatar did so well is because it was just a visual wonder. I mean, it was absolutely incredible. And to go back and see it several times in IMAX and in 3D especially, like, it was worth it for that alone, and that's why people went back to see it. Not necessarily the acting and the story and all that sort of stuff. But Star Wars offers great visuals as well, but it obviously has the lore. It has the actors. It has great new characters at the same time. So, like, it just has so much to offer, and it's Star Wars, and you're blending in old generations and new generations who want to see it over and over again. So it's I think it's only a matter of time before it takes the global box office too from Avatar.
I absolutely agree. Yeah.
So yeah, it's pretty exciting to see. And I'll be curious to see how far this train goes. It's pretty awesome.
I think it's going to go farther than we expect. I think it's going to do pretty well for a little while.
I think so, too. Absolutely. As you guys can probably tell, Brendan and I are still a little bit under the weather, trying to get over these colds, so just kind of bear with us.
I feel like I should just go with it and just talk like this.
Hey, we are we're trucking it. We're going through it.
We're dedicated.
Exactly. So,
and look at you making time to still even do this when you got to be moving pretty soon.
Yes, I'm in the middle of packing, which is taking up so much time. You know, like, we're going into this show, and one of the films we're going to be talking about, I literally just finished, so a lot of my thoughts are going to be very fresh. I'm still digesting a lot of that, but
no wonder you wanted me to go first on that one.
Well, that's part of it. Part of it is, I think, it's the better film that we're going to be talking about, but...
spoiler alert, sure.
Spoiler alert, yes. But it's just been a busy week, you know. Of course, you still have regular Sam duties and regular husband duties you got to do and all that sort of stuff, so...
Yeah, this is why I say don't get married.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. Not to all of our married listeners out there, I'm kidding. I want that someday. I'm a baby. I'm still a baby. I'm living life like a baby.
And we love you for it. Before we get into the show, just want to plug again real fast. January 17th episode 152 is our In Session Film Awards show and our top 10 of 2015. So we're getting closer and closer. This weekend, we'll be discussing The Revenant on episode 151. And then the week after that, it's our award show. It's very exciting.
I still feel like there's so many things I haven't seen yet.
Oh, I know.
There's probably going to be some things that we won't even get because Kentucky.
I know. But we'll deal with what we have, though, and hopefully we get a chance to see some of those. Like Son of Saul, I know, is one we're really hoping to get before we do that top 10 show. But that said, we do have a really interesting extra film this week, as we are going to be talking about the Ukrainian film The Tribe, which is getting some notoriety because there is no dialogue in the entire movie. It's all done through sign language with no subtitles. And we'll get more into that here shortly. And in the second half of the show, we are going to be discussing The Danish Girl, the latest film from Tom Hooper, which is getting at least some acting awards buzz with Alicia Vikander and Eddie Redmayne. And we'll talk more about that film later on in the show. But for now, Brendan, we got The Tribe to talk about. Let's get into it.
And here we go.
You're listening to the In Session Film Podcast Extra Film segment. Brendan, I'm not sure there's anything we can really do to set up this clip.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Okay, let's just be lame and uncreative. Just play the trailer.
All right, The Tribe is written and directed by Miroslav Slavospitsky and stars Gregory Fisenko, and I'll stop there because the rest of these names, I can't even begin.
We can't even guarantee how well we did those two names, so we apologize if they're way wrong, but we wanted to at least try with
knowledge. We at least tried, and you know, we got the director, and Gregory Fisenko, he is the main character of Sergei. And the film focuses on him quite a bit, so we at least went for him. The rest of the supporting players will do our best in this discussion. As we were saying, if you're not familiar with The Tribe, it is about a deaf teenager who is struggling to fit into a boarding school system. And as we mentioned earlier in the intro, there is no subtitles. The whole film is entirely in sign language, and it just kind of lets you as the viewer kind of experience the world, and you kind of have to interpret what's going on yourself, and that's exactly what we're going to try to do right here. So that said, Brendan, I'll toss it to you. What did you think about The Tribe?
Yeah, so kind of going off that, first thing is all the actors in this movie are deaf in real life. And as you mentioned, the film makes no use of any vocal language or subtitles to determine what they are saying. And in fact, what's interesting is the director, Slobodzinski, if that's how you pronounce his name, he doesn't even understand sign language himself. He had to have interpreters on set to, you know, to communicate and coordinate everything that was going on, which I thought was kind of interesting. So it's, the thing is, there's a script here. There are words being communicated. We just don't know what they are unless we speak Ukrainian sign language, but we don't. So the thing is, here's what's interesting. You said we had to try and interpret what was going on. Now, I don't know about you, but trying to interpret what was going on in this film from a narrative standpoint, for me, was not that difficult.
Sure.
And and the reason why, and why I say that, it's a huge praise to this film. And the first film I thought of when this film ended, this is going to sound strange, is Mad Max Fury Road. The reason why I thought about that is because Mad Max was getting such praise earlier this year for its use of visual storytelling. And I feel like those two words go so well together, even better with this film. I think this is a great example of how you utilize visual storytelling, but in a very subtle way. And I thought it was very, very interesting. Now, the movie itself, I actually think is quite good. I was really kind of riveted by this thing. And I think it has a lot to say about, and I'm trying to choose my words carefully here because I don't want to come across as like my words maybe sounding accidentally or indirectly offensive in any ways, but I think it has something to say about the nature of people with disadvantages, but how they could still have a certain, you know, degree of power and influence that we shouldn't underestimate. And when these common types get together, they have influence and they have power. And that common type can be anything. It could be whether it be a disadvantage or related to a certain ethnicity. I think it goes to show the how common types just have such power when they're integrated together and they work together at certain ways, but it's a very detrimental way in this film, especially with the character of Sergei, who is essentially influenced to basically help out this gang. I mean, that's what they are. They are a gang.
Yeah.
And they're forcing him to, kind of initiating him into this system to do bad things for them. And it gets very arduous at times. And there are scenes in this movie, mostly in the film's third act, and especially in the film's climax, I don't want to say what happens, but I almost threw up. I was I was so gutted by what I saw visually. I mean, I had to check the trivia to make sure that that wasn't real. It looked that real, but somehow it kind of felt well-earned in the nature of this film. I knew it was going in that direction, so it wasn't random. It felt thematically relevant to what I think this film was going for, and it haunted me. For, you know, it wasn't pleasant to see, but it did its job for what it was going to try and do, and it succeeded in that. So, you know, for a lot of those reasons, I have a hard time feeling like I can recommend this film, but I personally was really riveted by it. I think it has a lot to say, which is ironic because it says absolutely literally nothing. <It's> 'cause, but I found it surprisingly rich. I really, really like this film.
Yeah, I'm with you, Brennan. I really like this film as well. And I completely agree with you about Miroslav Slobodzinski and the way that he uses visual storytelling here. It is a huge credit to the film. You compared it to Mad Max Fury Road. I think a film more relevant to me personally is a film that we reviewed about a month ago now, I guess, or a few weeks ago, in Macbeth, where that film uses a lot of visual storytelling. A lot of the dialogue in that film was very murmured and very slurred for me. I had no idea what they were saying half the time.
Sure.
Even when I did understand some of the English words, it was that Shakespearean dialect that sometimes is very confusing.
That's fair.
But the reason that film worked for me is through the visual cues, through the human performances that we see in that movie, and that's why I was able to relate and understand what was going on. And I would say it's the same thing in this film as well, where, of course, you're not going to understand the language unless you know sign language, and I don't, but you do understand the heart of the story. You understand what these characters are going through the visuals, and again, through the performances. And what's interesting is not only is he using sign language, as a form of communication in this film, which I think makes it a little bit immersive. It kind of brings us into their world, right? Because this is how they live their life all the time. And it's different for us as an audience who, you know, we get to hear things in real life. And it's interesting to come into a world where you have to rely on other senses to understand what's going on. I thought that was really interesting. It makes for a very visceral experience, especially when you have no score. There is no music in this movie. Nope. So you hear a lot of footsteps in the hallways or on the ground. You hear like chairs creaking, different things like that. You start to pay attention to those little things. And when it comes to the camera work in this movie, I think it's absolutely wonderful. There's a lot of single takes. There's a lot of long tracking shots, which I think really adds to the immediacy of this movie. I think is really fantastic. I love the camera techniques and the cinematography. I think really captures this world in a fantastic way. And thematically, you get to some really interesting points too, Brendan, that kind of reminded me a little bit of our Bone Tomahawk conversation we had last week, where we were talking about how that film uses communication as a tool to kind of define what makes us human, right? Especially as it ties back to these ideas of mercy. And I think what's interesting with The Tribe is it's kind of doing the same things. It's using a language. Of course, it's not a verbal language, but it's still a sophisticated language between a bunch of these characters in this movie. But instead of course, tying it back to mercy, it's almost kind of the opposite of that. It's tying it back to these ideas that you're talking about of how their lack of abilities doesn't necessarily stop them from being human.
Right.
And you're right in the sense that this essentially becomes a gangster movie. That's what this movie is. It's a gangster movie about these teenagers at this boarding school. And it is riveting. I agree with you. It's absolutely fascinating. There are arduous acts in this movie. And I'm not sure if the director is trying to necessarily say something about, you know, people with the lack of abilities and how they can still be quote unquote normal, or maybe even taking it a step further with being kind of monsters and being evil. I don't know if that's what he's saying, but it is fascinating when you go back to these ideas of communication and how it defines us as people. Where Bone Tomahawk went the mercy route, which I think is fascinating. This movie goes on to display that these people are just not going to be hindered by life. They take advantage of the opportunities in front of them, and that can sometimes make them unlikable people. But I think it's fascinating how those themes are kind of similar and kind of working together. But in terms of the story here and the narrative, the way that the director kind of maneuvers the script, the way that he places the camera, the way that he uses the actors within the frame, I think a lot of it is really, really fantastic. And you feel that drama. Sometimes you feel the intensity of this movie, again, all without score. It's just a lot of visual storytelling here. And I think he succeeds on a pretty high level.
No, I completely agree. And kind of going back to the film thematically a little bit, I think there is definitely a level of what the director is trying to say as far as getting these common types together shows that they are still just like you and me. They're just like everyone else. And I think that there is a sense of that. I'm not sure, like you're saying, I'm not sure that's the full 100% point of the film. I think there's a lot more going on that makes it a lot more thematically rich than it probably deserves to be based on the nature of this film. But I do think that is there. And it is apparent in a way that I do think makes it even that much more rewarding and more interesting. A few other things that you did talk about that I want to briefly mentioned too is the cinematography of this film is very good. In fact, I was looking at the trivia. There are only 34 shots in this film, which is quite impressive for a movie that is slightly over 2 hours. I mean, it's not Victoria impressive, which was one take for over 2 hours, but it's a different game. It's a different agenda.
It's going to be very similar for people that are going to go see The Revenant this weekend, in the sense that there's a lot of long single takes in The Revenant. They're still cutting back and forth, but you follow the characters and the camera moves and it paces and it sways. that is essentially what this movie is doing as well. So people that see The Revenant this weekend, you'll get a sense of what this movie is doing. You'll get a sense of what this movie is doing with its camera. It's the same thing.
And that's a great point. I have not seen The Revenant yet, but you know, knowing someone like Alejandro González Iñárritu, he loves his long takes, and I expected him to do that. So, of course. But with The Tribe, the director is doing that as well, and I think it adds to the film's authenticity in many ways. I think it does a good job placing the viewer kind of within this world, which I thought was very fascinating. And the other thing that I really liked about this film, almost more than anything else, is it's not afraid to still show that the central character here of Sergei still has a quote-unquote likability about him. There's a humanity to him, and there's a point in this movie where part of the plot, he gets involved as being a kind of a pimp for these two girls at this boarding school, and one of them he seems to fall for, and that kind of puts him at odds with the rest of this quote unquote gang. And I think the head of this gang, I think they call him like the king or something. I think I was reading up on that. Obviously, we don't get that in the film. We have to read up on things like this. But that puts him at odds with a lot of these people, which starts to build a lot of tension with this film, which then lead to a lot of these things that happen in the third act that are just shocking to see. They're really shocking. But it adds a certain level of humanity that I think this film kind of needed, or else it would have just been too brutal for its own good. And it kind of makes you feel bad for the Sergei character, that there, even though he was doing bad things, you saw more about him being forced to doing bad things, and that he didn't really... it was hard to tell if he really wanted to be doing what he was doing or if he really didn't, but there was a certain level of humanity to him and the actor's performance, who is very good in this film. But I like that it went there as far as showing that this character still had a heart, and it added some humanity to the film as well.
No, I completely agree, and that was one of my favorite parts of this movie. I kind of am a little bit curious as to how my experience would be enhanced, maybe hindered, but enhanced, if I knew what he was saying in some of the scenes of this movie, because you are at a distance, because you are having to fill in the gaps of the specifics of what's happening within the scenes. And that can sometimes make the experience, I guess, a little bit more fuller. But at the same time, you understand what's going on. And you're right in the sense that you understand his humanity. You understand his affable nature about him. Even though he's involved in this gang, he does have this side of him that is compassionate, especially when it comes to this girl. And I think what's funny is, you don't necessarily see that reciprocated from the female character, you know, because through a lot of their intimate interaction, this movie, she's getting paid. So she's
still doing her job.
She is doing her job. But it goes back to these ideas of how intimacy can still connect us to somebody, whether we want them to or not. And he does fall for her. And I think that adds some interesting dynamics later on in the film, especially what you're talking about with him versus the king and kind of where that goes. It does lead to some pretty harrowing hex that is really crazy to watch. But in the end, I still found it pretty satisfying. I think the only problem I have with this film is that it does leave me a little bit passive, just because I'm forced to fill in the gaps. And I think that's an interesting style choice, don't get me wrong. And the more I digest it, and if I ever rewatch the film, I'd be curious to see how I start to fill those gaps a little bit. But I do think there could be more potency if there was subtitles. That being said, I'm kind of glad there's not, though, because it makes this a very interesting experience, very unique experience. And those ideas of love, those ideas of intimacy, I think are really well played. And you still get an understanding of where this character is coming from and what he's trying to accomplish despite all that.
Yeah, and it goes into the tagline of this film very well with what you're talking about there with love and intimacy. And because if you look at the poster, it says, "Love and hate need no translation." Now, if you ask me, like, most taglines for movies are just really, really flat out stupid. but that is amazing. That sums up a lot of what you're talking about perfectly. Yeah. And then it even goes to show how, you know, the communication itself in this film can almost be symbolic of that, which I kind of like. I kind of like, and I can definitely see your point as far as, I guess, maybe some of your quote unquote problems with the film as far as maybe leaving you at a bit of a distance that made you feel a little passive at times. I could definitely see that, because even me personally, as I was watching it, there was a point maybe about maybe the halfway or two thirds of the way through where I felt like it was starting to overstay its welcome a little bit, I guess you can say. But I kept coming back to the notion that I still think that's the point. I think the point is to be able to put you at a distance so you are this outsider looking in at a world that you don't fit into.
Exactly, yeah.
And I respect that out of it, even though it does maybe sometimes hinder the viewing experience, but I do like that about it.
I completely agree. In fact, the opening scene of this film, I think, is fantastic about really supplanting you in the experience you're about to have, because it's the camera stationed across from this bus stop, and it's just sitting there, and we see Sergei talking to this woman, but as they're talking, a couple of buses come by and they stop and get on passengers and then they leave. That happens several different times, and I think that's a lot of this film. Is you're kind of a little bit at a distance because you're not exactly sure what's going on, but you can still see what's happening. And things may get in the way a little bit, but in the end, you still know what's happening. You're still able to follow along. And where things do get a little bit stale, and I agree with you, I also felt like the style overstayed its welcome a little bit. But as soon as I would have those feelings, these characters would get into a situation that would pull me back in. And I feel like Slavoj Špický would also do something creatively, whether it be with the camera work or the way that he places the characters, that would also just bring me back in as well. So I was never fully disengaged. I was certainly passive at times. And like I was saying, you have to fill in the gaps through a lot of this movie, but I appreciate that he gives us the opportunity to do that. And I think he's saying something really diligently about this lifestyle and what these characters have to deal with on an everyday basis that, you know, we don't experience every day. And and I think he does a great job of, you know, making us feel that.
No, it was fun to fill in the gaps for me, at least. I enjoyed that notion of this film, unlike when we watched a movie like The Hateful Eight. Tarantino told us everything by the end of the film, and that ruined that fun for me. At least here, I enjoyed still doing that. So I completely agree, man.
All right, well, let's get to final thoughts and grades. So any other thoughts, and what grade would you give The Tribe?
Yeah, two other things I noticed I really appreciated about this film. One thing in response to something you were talking about earlier is that since there is no music, you're forced to listen to a lot of the aspects of the film diegetically. And one of my favorite things I noticed, like you were talking about footsteps and other little nuances like that, my favorite was when you sometimes heard these characters whisper something, because they obviously... These are people that were probably born deaf, so they don't even have any type of like literal verbal communication. So obviously they can't really physically talk since they never really learned how to speak. But sometimes I heard them say things that sounded like that actually they were. I actually heard some words there, and I don't know if it was. It sounded like English words, which I'm not even sure if that was really the point. Like there's a scene in the bathroom where they're bullying this young kid and trying to pull some money out of him. I thought I could have sworn I heard the one kid say like drop it. And I was
same here.
But I kept listening for those things too, which was actually I hate to use the word fun, but it kind of added to the fun of me watching the movie by filling in those gaps. So I like those notions that he had to pay attention to the film diegetically. The last thing I'll say is, also going back to the film in the beginning, is a lot of the aspects of the beginning of the film really set up that this character of Sergei is a very lonely character. He's alone. He arrives at this boarding school by himself, and I think that is very, very important to establishing this character from a humane standpoint. And I think that also helps, not just what we talked about with him kind of falling for this pimp and trying to, you know, kind of trying to help her in many ways. He goes and tries to get money for her unfairly. He does all these things. I don't want to spoil what actually happens, at least if that's my interpretation of what happens.
Sure.
But it does a good job setting him up as a humane character by showing him arrive alone here. And I, in many ways, my heart kind of broke for him in some points. And I'm not sure if that was the point, but You know what? That's what I interpreted. It's my interpretation. I don't understand Ukrainian sign language, so that's my interpretation. It made me appreciate the film more. At this point, I'd probably give the film an A-. I think it's very good. I think it's quite excellent. And that's mostly because of my, also with, coupled with my admiration of the craft here. I mean, it's a hard film to ever sit down and rewatch again. I'm not sure it would top like my list of favorite movies of the year just because of the arduous and conflicting nature of it. Yeah. But objectively speaking, it is so well done, so well handled, and so uniquely crafted that I can't give it anything less than an A-.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I love the craftsmanship of this movie as well. The long takes, I think, are really, really fun in a lot of sequences, especially as they're just walking around this neighborhood or walking through this boarding school. The way that the camera is used, it really helps you feel the experience even further, especially when there's no score and there's no music. I think it forces you to pay attention because there's no sound, because there's no dialect in this movie, that you really start to pick up on a lot of details that you may miss in other films. I think all of that is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Going back to something that you were saying about the Sergei character and his loneliness, I think that is a really interesting concept, because one of my favorite things about this film regarding these notions of love and where his character turns in the second half of the film is once he starts to fall for this girl, he becomes motivated. There's an extra pep in his step a little bit. And I think those notions of isolation that you're talking about, I think are certainly and directly connected to that, because this girl, while being paid, she still is giving him time and giving him his due. And he is very entranced by that. And once he starts to fall for her, you can see him more motivated, whether it being whether he's doing his regular, you know, quote unquote gangster duties, or whether he's just being around her, you can see that he is becoming a character that is more full of life. And I found that really, really fascinating, especially within this world. I thought was really fantastic. So
yeah,
I think there's a lot to appreciate about this movie as well. I really do like it quite a bit. And I would also give it an A-, and definitely one to check out. I agree with you though that this is not going to be for everybody. There are some very, very difficult sequences to watch in this film. The one that saying made you sick, I agree with. It is very, very hard to watch. It's very hard to watch, but in the end, I think the film as a whole is very satisfying because of the experience, because it's unique, because you have to fill in the gaps, but yet you can sit there and just kind of soak in the visual storytelling and being in a world that you're normally not in. I think this film is doing a very good job of supplanting you in that world, and I quite enjoyed it. I really enjoyed the experience. And I know this is coming out on Blu-ray pretty soon, within the next couple of weeks, so keep an eye out for that if this is something that you feel like is up your alley.
Absolutely.
On that note, if you want to read more of our thoughts, check out our Letterboxd page at letterboxd.com/insessionfilm.
And if you agree or disagree with our takes on The Tribe, you can let us know by leaving a comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/InSessionFilm, or you can tweet us at InSessionFilm, and you can also comment us on Google+, or you can email us at InSessionFilm@gmail.com. We hope you check this one out, guys. Many of you may not get the chance to see it, but if you do, let us know, and we'd love to talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to hear your thoughts as well. Stay tuned. Coming up next, we are going to go in a little bit of a different direction as we talk about Tom Hooper's latest film in The Danish Girl. So stay tuned. Mm-hmm. We'll be right back.
This week's extra film is brought to you by the True Bromance Film Podcast. This podcast is hosted by our good friends Hiro and Barry, and these two have incredible chemistry together. Their banter is awesome, their film knowledge is also quite spectacular as well, and it's an absolute joy just to listen to these guys talk movies, and I'm sure you will have a great time listening to them as well. Every week they'll review a new main release that has just come out, and they'll also have a top 5 section that relates back to that main review, kind of like a good cop, bad cop, or a best and worst kind of thing. It's a really great time, and they'll also talk about some of the other films that they've seen recently, so if you love movies and want to just hear two people talk about movies, this podcast is definitely up your alley. You could subscribe to them on iTunes as well as all other podcast platforms, or you can search for them on social media by simply searching for True Bromance Film. Tell them we sent you. It's absolutely worth your time, I promise. That's True Bromance Film Podcast. You're listening to the In Session Film Podcast Extra Film segment. Hey, JD, I've only met a handful of good people in my life, and you were two of them.
Oh, thanks. Me and Bing Bong really appreciate that.
Tell me, how was it?
You'd know if you'd been there.
I made us a supper.
You should have come.
It's a little sort of celebration.
This is not how it goes. Do these things together.
That was you and I now.
Stop playing that stupid game.
Please, Gerda. Don't you think this is a game?
You should have been there.
How could I? Look at me.
Not everything is about you. I need to see Aina.
Let me help.
I need my husband. Can you get him?
I can't.
I need to talk to my husband. I need to hold my husband.
All right, The Danish Girl is directed by Tom Hooper and stars Eddie Redmayne, Alicia Vikander, Amber Heard, Ben Whishaw, and a few others as well. So this movie has been getting some attention, mostly known for its performances. It has some Golden Globe attention in its acting categories, at least. And basically what this film is about, according to the plot synopsis released by Focus Features, is that it's a fictitious love story loosely inspired by the lives of the two Danish artists, Lilja Elbe and Gerda Wegner, and basically how their marriage and work evolve as they navigate Lily's groundbreaking journey as a transgender pioneer. So, pretty interesting stuff. So how about I'll toss it to you first, JD. What did you think about The Danish Girl?
Well, Brendan, a lot of times on this show, in particular when we talk about biopics, we always start off by saying that this is a story worth telling. And I want to echo that here as well. This is absolutely a story worth telling. It's obviously a big part of our culture today. It's still a fight that community is still fighting in a lot of ways.
Yep.
And to see a story about a woman who is groundbreaking in terms of that fight for transgenders, I think is absolutely riveting. And when you tell me that it's Tom Hooper, who I like, I don't love all of his work, but I like him.
Same.
And you have Eddie Redmayne and Alicia Vikander, Ben Whishaw, who I really like as well. All the pieces of the puzzle are there, right, for this to be a good movie. And based off of the trailer, I was very excited. I thought the trailer, of course, a lot of people are calling this very Oscar baity, and it may be, but I feel like Oscar bait does not have to equal terrible. I think there's a very, I think there's a confusion there among a lot of people that, oh, it's Oscar bait, it's terrible. That's not true.
No.
And so that didn't bother me at all going into this movie. But as we've talked about with a lot of biopics over the last few years, this one suffers from a lot of the same issues. And for me in particular, I think this is one of the more frustrating watches of 2015 for me, because there are seeds of a good movie here. Alicia Vikander is as good as advertised. She is wonderful in this movie. Eddie Redmayne gives a committed performance. He's really great. Ben Whishaw has some fantastic moments when he's on screen as well. And there are some wonderful, sweet, and tender moments in this film because of some great acting between Redmayne and Vikander. I think their chemistry, especially early on, like their kind of sweet moments as a husband and wife early on in this film, I thought were really beautiful. I really did like them. I liked Eddie Redmayne and the way that he comes across loving his wife. He's very, very much in love with his wife, and he very much supports her and wants the best for her. And you can see with Vikander how she is reciprocating that love, but she's also a little envious of Redmayne's status as a painter and where he's at in terms of his career. But there's a beautiful balance between the two in the first 15, 20 minutes of the film. However, after the first 20 minutes, this film really falls apart. The pacing of the film is very disjointed. There are time jumps, and the script is laid out in a way that makes no sense to me. And worst of all, the editing of this film is a complete and utter wreck. It makes the film so uneven that it's hard to really engage with this film, because as you've seen in the trailer, there comes that moment where they want to dress him up and go to this party, and it's like a game. And once it gets to that point in the movie, it's an absolute disaster from there on out, because Eddie Redmayne's character starts to display this conflict, as you're going to imagine, as you could understand what he's about to go through. But he starts talking about Lily. He starts embracing Lily like she's been around his entire life. But they don't show that in the movie. There's no buildup. There's no setup at all. It's just once he's Lily, he has been Lily. He's Lily forever. And there's no balance anymore in terms of who Redmayne is supposed to be in this movie. And it becomes really frustrating to watch. Saying that this film is disjointed and uneven, I feel like barely begins to describe the narrative mess that this film is. I do think it's well shot. I think from a technical standpoint, Tom Hooper is doing some really interesting things that I liked. Like, he throws in some sequences to add in some interesting drama that I don't know if it's well earned within the context of the film, but watching it on screen, they are just beautiful sequences on their own. And I think the acting sells those sequences. And the other thing, and I want to make sure I hit on this point, is that Alexander Desplat's score is incredible. So good. One of my favorite scores of the year. So good. And that's what I was saying in terms of there was potential here. Those sequences on their own are great. But within the context of the script, the way that Tom Hooper is trying to piece this together, it makes no sense. And unfortunately, a lot of the film, especially its cathartic moments near the end, are just not earned.
So before I get into everything that you were just talking about, I want to talk about, or at least just talk about, the year of 2015 overall, as far as how film in general from 2015 have demonstrated womanhood and women empowerment. And just when you look at the fantastic performances by female roles this year, which is some of the most bountiful that we've ever seen in the past decade or so, it's incredible. And you have a lot of movies coming out this year that really demonstrate the notion of, you know, what womanhood means and the power of them and the internal, you know, the internal depths of all that. You know, even a movie like Mad Max Fury Road kind of did that indirectly, which I thought was fascinating. And then you get this thing coming here, which totally negates all those appropriate and beautiful thematic things by focusing on the notions of womanhood as superficial and object things. Because I'm trying to choose my words carefully here, because I don't want to sound cruel or anything, but I found this movie pretty offensive. And that's really my biggest problem with the film, aside from all the aesthetics that you were talking about, which I will get into. But as I mentioned, I found this movie pretty offensive because the movie fully and only demonstrates all the superficial things about this character played by Eddie Redmayne, who always felt that he was a woman and wanted to be a woman, but it's focused on clothing. It's focused on hand gestures. It's focused on makeup and facial expressions and behaviors. And that's, to me, that's, it's almost like taking the movie Pretty Woman with Julia Roberts and saying that's supposed to be taken seriously. That's how it kind of felt for me. And the other thing is, I understand that the movie's trying to be in, you know, about sexual orientation, you know, as well. The problem there is that they never use it well enough as a thematic device to make that well earned, because that's understandable. Sexual orientation is something that's almost inexplicable. It's hard to define. Sometimes it is just there. I understand that there are people out there, men and women, that believe that they need to live their lives the way that they feel like they need to, and that is wonderful for them. I'm okay with that. But the movie never utilizes that sexual orientation ideal as a thematic device to earn that and have me respect it. So I have no respect for this film at all. I really disliked it just for those reasons alone. The only thing that potentially saved this movie from being such a disaster and one of my worst films of the year are two words: Alicia Vikander, who is, as you mentioned, as good as she has ever been. If she gets nominated for an Oscar for Best Lead Actress, she is a lead actress in this movie,
She is. Yeah.
If she gets nominated, I would not be disappointed, despite me not liking this movie at all. But she is so good here. And she elevates some of the potential problems, or the problems here, in a way that is kind of surprising. She brings a certain authenticity and a warmth and a depth to it. Her character is kind of funny. Her character is kind of charming. And then in the moments when she has to support her husband who believes that he is a woman, she still stands by him, or her. I guess we have to call him her, because that's how he would want it. So she still supports her. And I kind of think that she, or I really think that she did a great job showing that, and it was kind of wonderful to see. I also think Eddie Redmayne is very committed, as you were talking about. I think he gives it his all and he tries. I don't think the character was given really enough depth to really warrant a respectable thematic device out of it, unfortunately, but that's more the script, as you were talking about, which is the biggest problem here. It's such a superficial, gloss overing of what this story was. I felt like I didn't learn anything. I felt like I didn't really, as much as I do think that this story is worth telling, as you said, I didn't see the purpose of it in this film, because I didn't have anything attached to me that resonated with me on a thematic level that would have made me respect it more, despite even Eddie Redmayne's good performance. It just, the character himself or herself wasn't fleshed out in a respectable way for me to find that well earned, despite even all the other characters and the performances are great. I think those are great as well. And aesthetically, as you were talking about, it's fine. But man, everything else underneath, thematically and a script wise, it's a disaster. It really is.
Yeah, I completely agree. And to touch on your points about how the film fails to use sexual orientation as a thematic device, I agree with you that the film only hints at those ideas. It certainly brings them up, and we see the conflict within the Lily character. It's there, but you're right in terms that they barely scratch the surface on it. I mean, they do not go deep into it at all. Mm-hmm. In fact, a lot of it we see through the Alicia Vikander's character. I mean, really a lot of it is from her perspective, which is why she is the lead actress of this movie. I completely agree. I just wish that they would have gone into that conflict a little bit further. And when they do, I think it's riveting, because one of my favorite parts of the movie is when Redmayne's character has not really fully transitioned to Lily. He is still the husband. And he realizes that his wife is wanting him as a man, right? And he realizes that there's a problem. And it comes to a point where he basically just says, I got to leave. I got to go. And she's like, well, where are you going? And he's like, I love you. I got to go find a solution. And I thought that was great. I thought that was a great line. And then we go into the sequence where he's doing his own research and looking into books and journals to figure out what is going on with him. And of course, he doesn't really fully know. But the fact that he is embracing that conflict, I thought that was a great moment. But those are very far and few in between in this movie. And outside of that, I agree with you. They focus on kind of the more superficial items like clothes and,
you know, what kind of defines a woman on the surface. And I'm okay with some of that if that is true to the real life person. Of course, this is a fictitious version of that, so I don't know how true that is. But if it's true to real life that Lily, for her, that dresses and makeup and all those things, like that's part of what helped define her, then I'm okay with that. But the film doesn't do anything to tell us that. The film does not explain or explore at all that that's what defined her as a woman. You have to assume that. And I don't know if you're assuming correctly in that.
Yeah.
And it probably goes deeper than that. It's probably more that she felt like she was a woman because of her emotions and how she feels and, you know, and who she loves. Like, it probably is more than just that. But by just watching this film, on the surface, you just feel like it's those small things that define the Lily character. And I agree, that's offensive.
Yeah, the only thing we're ever given is that he at this point, because Lily wasn't, as a young child, was still in her male state, I guess you can say, that they did say that there was a moment as a child that she had with her best friend Hans, where he was in an apron, and then they kind of goofily kissed, which led to her father kind of kicking him out of the house and all these things. Like, that's talked about, but that's like what, like 25 seconds of the movie?
Yeah.
If that's all we're given, I mean, we're basically told that internally, Lily always felt like that she was a woman, even born as a man, she felt like she was a woman. But if that's all we're being told, that's not enough. That is not enough to drive the notion home that sexual orientation is inexplicable and hard to define but really is a natural thing. And it's a worthy talking point. But if that's all we're given, that's a no-no for me.
I agree, and I think another reason it doesn't work, going back to the editing, which I think is just so bad in this movie, is early on, once she makes the turn to become Lily, Anair starts talking about her like she's always been around, but we haven't seen that before. Mm-hmm. And he starts talking about her in like the third person, like they're not connected in any sort of way. And then it'll cut back to him dressed up as Lily, meeting with all these other guys. And then it'll cut to Lily having conversations with Gerda about what she's doing, and I guess we're supposed to take it that she's been doing this for a long time, but all this happens within a 2 or 3 minute sequence,
right?
And I'm sitting there going, is this been going on for a long time, or like there's no fleshing out of that. And I think that also just kind of hinders what the Lily goes through in terms of trying to find her identity and embracing this, and instead we're just giving these, you know, little superficial things. And I don't know if it comes back to the script, which I think it could be that, but I think the editing, I think maybe there are scenes that are cut out that perhaps hinder that, because the editing along with the narrative are both just horrible in this film.
You know, as cheap and gimmicky as a sequence like this would be, I think this needed some kind of flashback sequencing or something to just kind of showcase the life of Anir as Anir when he was a young boy. And with maybe that scene that we are talked about of he and his best friend Hans, and that moment that they had as a young friendly, I don't want to say couple, but them as young friends together, young boys together. I think we needed something like that to at least help drive the notion that this sexual orientation and that this belief has always been lingering there. I think it would have at least helped support the film thematically in that regard. But yeah, you're right. We are never, ever given that. And as judging the film as it is on its own, I really do think it goes back to the script more than anything else. It feels like just such a superficial adaptation of this. And at the same time, I'm not sure if this is how the novel is or not, but as we read off the synopsis, this is a fictitious love story, so it's inspired by this event. It's loosely inspired more than anything else. It's not as true as it might have actually been, which makes me further question the authenticity of this film, which makes everything else about the film, whether it either be the side romance that forms, any other relationship ties that are formed, it makes all those things even feel more unearned for me by knowing that. And yeah, that's also kind of disappointing too. This may have worked better as a documentary.
I agree. I completely agree with that, yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, let's get to final thoughts and grades before we move on and tear this thing apart too much. So, JD, I'll toss it to you first. Any final thoughts, and what grade would you give The Danish Girl?
Well, you mentioned the Hans character a few times, and while we are told that he has an interaction with Anir early on in their lives, he has a significant role in the second half of this movie that I feel like is really contrived for the most part. There are some interactions that he has, especially with the Gerda character, that I wanted to punch the screen at a couple of times because it was so ridiculous. Because
and so unearned.
So unearned because, you know, there's an element where Gerda is struggling because she's losing her husband. And you can relate with that, and Alicia Vikander is fantastic at showcasing that. Right. And there comes moments where she starts to use Hans to basically try to figure some things out. And again, the way that it is edited, a lot of those scenes are so stupid. They just make absolutely no sense. It's absolutely ridiculous. The thing that saves this movie for me is, of course, Alicia Vikander. And I do like Eddie Redmayne. I agree with you 100%, Brennan, that the Lily character, unfortunately, has very little depth. The exploration of her struggle is very superficial. There are some great moments. There are some wonderful moments. But overall, they make it very shiny and very glossy. And I'm not exactly sure on the approach there, but that's the way it comes off in this film. But that said, there are some really tender moments between Vikander and Redmayne that is sold completely on the acting and the score by Alexander Desplat. And I did appreciate, though, like, there was a lot about this film that I really did like. And I think those sequences on their own, I could watch them over and over again because I did have fun with those. But as a cohesive piece, this film is, well, anything but cohesive. You know, it is so uneven. It is so disjointed that it makes for a very frustrating watch. And that's unfortunate because I feel like there's more to this story that I want to know, that I would like to see in maybe a documentary or another dramatic piece. But there's a lot missing in this film, and it's very unfortunate. That said, I will probably give this a C-. I think maybe that's a little generous, but Vikander is that good. Redmayne is fantastic. I did like the moments between the two of them. And despite some contrivances, especially in the second half of this film, there are some moments between the two of them near the end that I think have heart. But it's not really 100% earned, which, again, is, you know, makes me want to punch Tom Hooper in the face. But and that said, you know, for those that don't even want to watch this movie, I highly recommend the score. It's on Spotify. Alexander Desplat's score is one of my favorites of the year. I think when it comes to the Academy, when it comes to the Oscars, there is no doubt in my mind when it comes to best score. Two guarantees will be the score from The Danish Girl by Desplat and Carter Burwell's score for Carol. Those two will absolutely be there. I think Junkie XL for Mad Max Fury Road might have a chance. I'd like to see that as well. But those two are especially are very, very much lock in key. They're very much going to be there. And it's wonderful. It's a great piece of music. So definitely go and check that out at least.
Yeah, I'll pretty much agree with everything you said. So I'll try to make this as brief as possible. But I will say this, kind of going off of what you were saying. I think the first 15 or 20 minutes of this film, I was sitting there thinking, well, I know this is getting some hate from, you know, a lot of some critics, from a lot of our, you know, cinephile friends in our circle, I guess you can say. I know it's getting a lot of backlash, and I'm sitting here thinking by the 20-minute mark, why? This is nice. This is tender. Yeah. This relationship is great. And it's it's doing that.
Oh, it's that. Yeah.
Oh, God. Okay, yeah, this movie's bad.
Yeah, that was exactly my experience verbatim.
But no, it really is. it's almost, I would call it more of a disappointment than anything else, because you're right, there are seeds of a great idea here, or maybe not even a great idea. There's a great movie here, but it's a bad script. It's a superficial script. It's indirectly an offensive script, at least it was for me, because it doesn't delve into the notions of womanhood like I think it wanted to, or like I think it should have done. And so I don't know, but I'm with you though as far as the score. I think it is downright gorgeous. I was listening to it on the way home from even seeing the movie, because I just wanted something beautiful from the film to stay with me, if it was just the music, because during those opening credit sequences with those beautiful landscape shots, it was really tender.
It was.
And that tenderness transcended into the relationship that these two have very well. They're charming. They're kind of funny. They have great charisma. And when it's needed, when they need to showcase, you know, heart and soul and, you know, depression, whatever it's going through them, through the arduous nature of this, of the movie in itself, some of it is earned just because the performances are that good.
Yeah.
But that's like maybe 10% out of them, I guess, if I had to do the math. But Alicia Vikander saves it for me from being a total train wreck more than anything else. So I'm with you. I would also give it a C-, but yeah, kind of still thinking that's kind of generous. Without Alicia Vikander and her performance, this would probably be like in the D range. But she really is that good. Yeah. So it's disappointing. It's disappointing that you got a great performance like that in such a bad film. But anyway, those are our thoughts. We'll have more thoughts on our Letterboxd page that you can read, which is at letterboxd.com/insessionfilm.
And again, we'd love your feedback. So leave a comment on the website at insessionfilm.com or hit us up on Facebook or Twitter. But yeah, we would love to hear from you and your thoughts on The Danish Girl. Hopefully you enjoyed it more than we did, but unfortunately this time last year we reviewed The Gambler, and this is like that for us.
To be fair, I think that was a far worse film though. I mean, that's a different kind of film.
It is very, very, very different. I know. It's just like one of those last extra films before you do the award show, and you're like, oh.
We had to lump this in.
I was looking forward to this too. I was hoping that the reviews were, you know, kind of wrong, you know, because, you know, especially like films like this sometimes can get hate, and I can like them because it looks sweet. It did look tender based off of the trailers, and it was that for a few minutes. Fizzled out rather quickly. Anyway, on that note, that should do it for this week's show. Again, just a reminder, you can follow us on social media, including YouTube and Google Plus. Just search In Session Film and you'll find us on all those platforms.
You can also subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, as well as Jabbercast. But while you're on iTunes, please leave us a review and a comment there. We'd appreciate some feedback there as well. You can also find us at the Lost at Home podcast, which is at lostathomepodcast.com. Our good friends have been featuring our shows and reviews every single week there, and we really appreciate their support. Our podcasts are also syndicated every single week at geekcastradio.com and the Lamb Podcast Network. And you can also check out our Listen Now page, which is on our site at insessionfilm.com/listen-now.
And the In Session Film podcast is supported by our super awesome listeners like you. Once again, if you want to help us, just go to our website at insessionfilm.com. Click on that bonus content tab in our main menu to hear our fun bonus content for just a small donation of 99 cents. You can check out the In Session Film store or simply go to insessionfilm.com/donate. And there you'll see a bunch of information there and how you can help us. One thing that I would recommend is checking out our mobile app, where you can hear everything we do under one roof for just a one-time fee of $1.99. You can find the app on the Amazon market for Android devices, the Windows 8 phone store for Windows devices, and the Podcast Box app for iOS devices. And again, all those details are on the site at insessionfilm.com/apps. As for this weekend on episode 151, as we mentioned in the intro, we are going to be talking about The Revenant. We are also going to be talking about the top three best shot films of 2015.
That's appropriate.
Yeah, it is very, very appropriate. And I think we're going to finish off that show talking a little bit about the director of The Revenant, Alejandro González Iñárritu, who, you know, if you follow cinephiles, especially on Twitter, there is like a special breed of hate for Iñárritu that I find really fascinating. So we're going to talk about that and perhaps what that means for the movie world. So So that will be episode 151 this weekend. Before we get out of here, Brendan, any final thoughts on anything before we leave?
Watch The Tribe. Don't see the Danish girl. That's it.
That is fair enough. As far as final thoughts for me, I just want to say a big thank you to First Time Watchers and True Bromance for all of their support on our show. 2015 was great, and we really appreciate you guys being sponsors on the show and plugging us every week. We love doing this with you guys, and hoping to a great 2016 as well. So love you guys. Look forward to getting trolled by you guys further in the next year.
Well, speak for yourself.
Which I am.
No, I can't say that. I love these guys. In fact, I actually just got a chance to guest with the First Time Watchers and talking about Quentin Tarantino's The Hateful Eight. So it's a joy always talking to them, as well as True Bromance. You know, we love them. We love you guys.
Yes, absolutely. Look forward to a great year. Our 2016, though, doesn't start for a few more weeks. So holding out. Looking forward to a great year, though. So we'll get more into that here in the next couple of weeks. On that note, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you guys next time on the In Session Film Podcast. Slabosh Pitsky.
I think if you say it a lot faster, it probably flows better, like Slabosh Pitsky. I think it's probably like that.
Slabosh Pitsky. Okay. Yeah. I think I can handle that. It might take a few times, but
I trust you.
And then what? Grigory Frensko, Yana Novakova, Rosa, Baby. Sounds good.
I didn't know you're going to go to the actors, but okay.
Alexander, I think I'll just stick with and stars Grigory Fisenko and then a whole bunch of other people.
I think Sergey is the main character, so
he is. Yeah. So.
Oh wow, just we're recording there. All this. You got a lot of blooper content.
I know. I do.